www.ai.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, we're back on the Paracast. Chris, however, is not at his home studio. He is in New Mexico on a secret voyage. No, it's not so secret. I'll tell you about it in a few minutes. You know, I want to start this discussion and relate it to last week's great debate with Kevin Randall and Scott Ramsey over the Aztec crash. I wanted to make a few observations, and then Chris will chime in with his. And that is, now I grew up in a small town called Brooklyn, New York, with about 2.5 or 3 million people. But Aztec, New Mexico today has, what, 65, 6,600 people. In small town America, especially during the 40s and 50s, everybody knew everybody. The local newspaper had all the stuff that's going on, the births, the marriages, everything else. So now just imagine now that in March of 1948, a flying saucer lands or crash lands in a nearby area called Hart Canyon. Some people see it, but then the military convoys come in. They build these one or more concrete slabs, we know of one of them, and they cart this thing away. And you know who knows about this in 1948 and 1949? Nobody. This happened under their sight. There was no word about the presence of the military, no word about a UFO crash. Everything about this case appears to begin with a 1950 book called Behind the Flying Saucers by Frank Scully. Now, this isn't to say that Scott Ramsey hasn't found people or people who knew people who claimed to have seen this flying saucer, a spaceship, or whatever it was. But as Kevin Randall pointed out during the interview, the key issue here is that the record doesn't predate the Scully book, which possibly polluted the information pool. The local newspaper had nothing about it. Now, Ramsey says this newspaper was kind of like a shopper, you know, local merchants and ads and everything. But I assure you, if anything that important occurred, any local newspaper I know about would have something about it. And they didn't. What's your take on this, Chris?
Well, yeah, and I agree. And that's something I kept bringing up throughout the episode is, do we have any evidence that predates the Scully book? And that to me is really important for the Ramseys to establish something, anything, some sort of evidence chain that goes back before the first known mention of it. And I think until they do that, we're just going to have, you know, a standstill in terms of any sort of forward motion, forward progress on ascertaining the reality of the Aztec crash. But to be honest with you, Gene, I've always, whenever I heard Aztec over the last 25 years, however long I've been interested in this subject, I always had the feeling that there was really nothing to it. I think the Ramseys have some pretty compelling evidence to suggest that something happened. But again, until we can really determine some sort of evidence prior to the Scully book, I think we're going to be spinning our wheels with it.
What can I say? This is one of those problems where we can be talking till the end of time, and we're dealing with an event that happened 65 years ago.
Yep, it's time. The clock is ticking on it. So,
well, the clock is already ticked off, and the alarm bells have rung. So what does someone like a Scott Ramsey do today? But I think the real issue is here, if such a thing really happened, would it be possible to cover it up in a way that nobody in the community would know about it?
That would be really difficult to do, especially back then. Everything that happens, and coming from a small town in Colorado after 13 years, I can tell you that it's really difficult for something major like that to occur and not have any sort of word get out. You know, you have just down the road from Aztec, we're going to be talking about this particular area of New Mexico, There's a lot of interesting things that have gone on over the years, and there is a lot of evidence and people, witnesses, and actual documentation that we can go to ascertain the reality of some of these rumors and reports and other things, as we'll talk about later here in the show. But again, I think it would be almost impossible for something that big to have all that type of equipment move through a small town, even at night, without somebody taking notice and start poking around trying to find out what's going on. Small town folks tend to be like that. They tend to be very protective. They tend to be very curious and very alert and aware of their surroundings and things that are going on.
So is there a point where someone like a Scott Ramsey has to say, well, this is the best I can do, and we can't go any further? Because a lot of the book is devoted not to presenting evidence of the case, but to resurrect the reputation of Frank Scully, Leo Gebauer, or however you pronounce it, I don't care, and Silas Newton. Because if you don't do that, there is no credibility whatever that you can attach to this case.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the things that I found very compelling was the Denver sting operation that was set up to try to get the photographs, and that the government got involved. I think that's very interesting. And I think the Ramseys should try to dig into that particular scenario of the guy offering to sell photographs and then being set up by the cops. And then, you know, I don't feel that there's enough resolution on how that story played out. And it'd be really interesting to see some more information if they could somehow dig it up.
Well, it all goes back to the beginning, though. Did a UFO crash at Aztec, New Mexico? It's not something I think we'll ever be able to prove. Now, it's a very different case with Roswell, because in Roswell, there was newspaper coverage. Yes, they first said it was a flying saucer, then it was a balloon. But there was coverage. People were involved. People knew about it. So whatever answer or solution you ascribe to Roswell, is it a test aircraft? Is it a UFO? Is it a balloon of some sort? Whatever it is, an event occurred. Something happened. That can be demonstrated with eyewitness testimony, with documents of the period. There's no paper trail for Aztec that precedes Frank Scully's book. So there you go.
There you go.
Chris is just gone. As a matter of fact, I see him just traveling farther and farther away. Now, I'm not saying there was no Aztec crash or landing or whatever the heck it was. I'm just saying is that the trail, as far as I can see, is pretty cold. And at the same time, though, it's not as if the Ramseys are trying to play a game to make money. Because as far as I can tell, Scott Ramsey is a successful business person. He doesn't need the money. If he spent, as he says, $500,000 to investigate Aztec, he'll never get that money back. Clearly, he had money to burn. Clearly, he didn't feel the loss of that money. Clearly, he's dedicated to what he's doing. If he's on the right path, maybe he'll come up with something. I'm just skeptical. But I also am concerned about people who think he's being deceptive, who think he is slippery as an eel. Now, he knows his stuff, but no, I can't see that he's being deceitful.
Yeah, you've got it. I don't think that you can, in all fairness, question his motivations. I think he's very passionate about the subject and has done a really good job at least uncovering the amount of amazing amount of information that he has uncovered. But, you know, it doesn't really matter until we can, as it keeps it sound like a broken record, we need to ascertain something, anything, prior to the Scully book.
Okay, but we have something here today that has more authority to it, I'm quite sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is going to be a fascinating interview. Now,
you're surrounded by some of the most gruesome photographs I've ever seen, stacks of police reports, amazing evidence, physical evidence found at mutilation sites. So this is going to be a very interesting show today, Gene.
Okay, so we have Greg Valdez, and he is the son of Gabe Valdez, a New Mexico State Patrolman, and he has a new book out called Dulce Base, The Truth and Evidence from the Case Files of Gabe Valdez. A lot coming up here, and this is an on-the-scene broadcast. Chris and Greg are right there in a special makeshift studio. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
There is a false sense of security that the greatest economic crash since the Great Depression is over. But unemployment is still at a 20-year high, and until Americans are working again, the economy has not recovered. What is the smartest investment you can make? It's food. Having a supply of eFoods Direct 25-year shelf life food is your best investment for the troubled times today and the future. For 32 years, the folks at eFoods Direct have helped thousands take the trouble out of troubled times. So to celebrate our 32-year anniversary, get the best insurance possible with a special one-time offer. A two-month food supply for only $320 and free shipping. That's 352 servings of our newest and most popular award-winning recipes at less than a dollar per serving. The 25-year shelf life allows you to lock your food cost against inflation. Call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. The two-month supply is only available for a limited time. Call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris on location in New Mexico, Albuquerque, right?
Yep, correct.
Okay, on location with Greg Valdez. And just to give you a brief on this, Greg is author of a book called Dulce Base, The Truth and Evidence from the Case Files of Gabe Valdez. And Chris is also gathering information for his new book called Stalking the Herd. So you all came together. So, Chris, I'm going to start interviewing you, and then you can interview Greg there. How did you get involved with the Valdezes and also this particular book?
Well, Gene, my involvement actually stems all the way back to the early 90s when I met Greg's father, Gabe Valdez, who at the time was just retiring as a New Mexico State Patrolman. He was based in the Dulce area. He actually grew up in Chama, which is the next town to the west of Dulce, and in Rio County. And Gabe, of course, knew Tom Adams, David Perkins, Linda Howe, Howard Burgess, a lot of the people that I had initially approached to get myself up to speed about the unexplained livestock death phenomenon. And Gabe was very, very helpful. I found him to be very credible, a crack law enforcement officer, a good investigator. He gave me all sorts of great tips, how to do things, how to interview people properly. And I was very grateful for that sort of help and suggestions and instructions on how to really maximize my potential as an investigator out in the field. And through the years, you know, Gabe investigated, dozens of cattle mutilation cases in the mid to late 70s into the 80s. He was really at the forefront of one of the hardest hit areas, ranching areas in the country, especially around the Gomez ranches outside of Dulce. And Greg, as a kid, used to accompany his dad on some of these investigations and was actually present at some very, very, I would say almost historic cases that we have documentation on. And Gabe was a meticulous documentarian. He kept copies of all his files, hundreds of photographs. He actually found physical evidence at sites, including tripod marks, a gas mask, a radar chafe. We're going to get into all these things as we progress through the show. But what I'd first like to do is get Greg to tell us a little bit about his background, how he really developed an interest enough to accompany his dad on some of the trips, and give us a little, just a kind of a sense of how he really got hooked by this whole thing. So, Greg, welcome to the Paracast. Why don't you go ahead and kind of give us some background on yourself and explain how you got involved with all this for our listeners out there.
Well, first of all, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate being on the show. Give you a little bit of background. Like you mentioned earlier, I used to accompany my dad on all these cases. Growing up as a kid, it's pretty interesting to see all these strange lights, dead cows, even though that might be kind of gross for some people. But I used to ride around with him. As I got older, I became a state police officer and following the footsteps of my dad, and then she became a DEA agent. I'm retired from DEA. So I followed a career in law enforcement like my father, as I mentioned earlier, but it's always something I've been interested in. Dulce was a hot spot for a lot of things, especially the mutilations. Of course, the story of the Dulce base came out later. But even UFO sightings was a hot topic for Dulce, and it seems like we had anyone and everyone that was an expert in the field would end up at our house in Dulce. And just by luck of the draw, my dad being involved, I got to meet a lot of the top investigators that have been in this field for, it's going on 40 years now. So it's just an interest I've always had. And me and my dad, it was something we always talk about when he was alive, and we'd always compare notes on new stuff, old stuff, and whatever was developing.
Well, you have a new book out, and I really must say first, you know, at the top of the show here, that I really appreciate the amount of work that it went into getting this book completed, and it's filled with some very surprising things in there. I've already learned a lot just by reading it and getting a better sense of your dad's thinking. Of course, your dad was kind of handcuffed in the latter years of his investigative work by his affiliation with the National Institute of Discovery Sciences, and we'll get into that too later on in the show. But what was your impression as a kid when you were going out in the 70s on some of these cattle mutilation cases? What was your sense of this? Did you think that we were looking at predator damage? How are the ranchers responding to this? There's been obviously over the years a lot of controversy about what is causing these animal deaths. I think just by looking at some of the files and photographs that you showed me here, I think we can pretty much rule out predators. When you have an animal that's been, you know, one whole side has been baked by microwaves, I don't think the coyotes have bad breath, but not that bad. So why don't you give us a sense of what it was like as a kid going out there?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, my dad was very meticulous in his investigations, and that included murders, rapes, whatever the case. That was his job. He loved his job, and he was good at it. He also applied that to the cat emulation. Some people might have viewed this as just merely a dead cow, but when you think about it, it was pretty groundbreaking that they had a retired scientist, Howard Burgess, come and start documenting scientific evidence for what most people would just view as a dead cow. They took it very serious. Now, these ranchers, they've been doing this all their life. They know the difference between a cow that's been killed by coyotes, predators, whatever the case. They're not going to call my dad in a panic back in this day if it wasn't something that they knew was out of the ordinary. Of course, you have the Kenneth Rommel story, which kind of muddied the waters, but it was always apparent that it wasn't predators. They looked at everything you can think of in the Dulce area, a cult group, local pranksters, saint worshippers, aliens, you name it, but it always pointed back towards the government or some human entity involved at one point or another.
That's one thing that I noticed. Your dad, when he was interviewed towards the latter years of his life, and we did lose your dad, I think, in August of 2011, if I'm not mistaken, which is a real loss for the investigation community, I must say. He was like a grandfather to a lot of us. Like I said in the beginning, he was really one of the top investigators and probably had the most grounded sense about all this stuff. It's very difficult for him to jump to conclusions. He would not do that. He would let the evidence do the jumping to conclusions based on the evidence. So, you know, one thing that he was pretty reluctant to talk about, especially in the last couple of interviews that he did, including an interview I think he did about a week before he died with Open Minds, it seemed like he was getting ready to come out and really start pointing fingers. He never really did publicly. Of course, he did talk to some of us, and it was confidential, so, you know, I didn't ever say, well, you know, State Patrolman Gabe Valdez told me this, and that it's this, that it's that. You know, I always honored that request for being off the record. But what can you say now about his thinking? I mean, he went through three decades almost of investigations, and you were very close to him, obviously, being the son that took the most interest in his extracurricular work, as it was. How could you sum up your dad's thinking about the mutilation phenomenon? Is there a way to do that?
Before we have an answer, we have to do our break. We have Greg Valdez, author of Dulce Base, The Truth and Evidence from the Case Files of Gabe Valdez. You're on with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Tees. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
People are taking charge of their lives with healthier lifestyles. That's why you have to experience the Raleigh-Durham Gluten and Allergen-Free Wellness Event. One day only, Saturday, August 17th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Durham Convention Center in Durham, North Carolina. Explore the Gluten and Allergen-Free Wellness Event, where learning is fun and delicious. Discover the world of gluten-free with free samples, cooking demonstrations, and lectures with well-known members of the gluten-free community. Enter the raffle and you could win the grand prize of a catered barbecue from Bonesucking Sauce, valued at $3,000. The Raleigh-Durham Gluten and Allergen-Free Wellness Event, August 17th at the Durham Convention Center. For more, visit RaleighGlutenFreeExpo.blogspot.com. RaleighGlutenFreeExpo.blogspot.com. Presented by Udi's Gluten Free, Glutino, Enjoy Life Foods, and Youngevity.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fem and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Ian and Chris in the Paracast, we have Greg Valdez joining us. Chris asked Greg a lengthy question, as is Chris's wont. Greg, your response?
Well, I know it's frustrating for my dad because this case, he's been involved with it for nearly 40 years before he passed away. And I heard some of the interviews you were talking about. He couldn't talk about it because what a lot of people don't realize, when he was working for the National Institute of Discovery Science, or NIDS, out of Las Vegas, they made him sign a non-disclosure agreement. And, of course, I didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement. Some people laugh. I don't know if I'll be laughing about that here in a few months, but... So I knew a lot of the stuff that he couldn't talk about. He wanted to, but he just legally couldn't because it would put him in a bind that he knew better than to mess with. So that's why...
You don't want to step on a billionaire's toes.
No, I don't. That's just not a headache I need to deal with. So I knew it was frustrating for him because he knew the answer to a lot of the questions people would ask him, but he just legally he couldn't say it because he was in a bind where he couldn't comment on it. And it was frustrating for him because... Like we mentioned earlier, he's very meticulous, and this is one of the cases that has haunted him. You know, he handled plenty of cases as a state police officer, and he used to pride himself in solving those cases, and that was his motivation to solve the mutilation mystery and the UFO mystery in Dulce.
Who did he think was behind it? You mentioned the government. That's a theory, one of three theories. A lot of people think that it's either the government, it's misidentified scavenger action, let's say, there are a few cases that could be some sort of cult activity, but the majority of cases, I've always felt, had some sort of government connection to them. Obviously, there's people who look at the high strange cases, and there are a number of them, I must say, that can't be explained readily. There's been investigators like Linda Howe who look at the high strange cases and have come up with the theory that aliens are here for various reasons, gathering cattle parts. I personally feel that that is the least likely explanation, but getting back to your dad, I mean, how did his thinking evolve in terms of the government's involvement? Give us kind of a sense of how the evidence chain just started to stack up and point in that direction.
How it started is just basic investigative work, which a lot of people I think have ignored in the past, is you follow the evidence, you don't create evidence to make your theories fit. So especially in this day and age with the internet. Keep in mind, this was the 70s. I didn't have internet libraries up in Dulce, so it was a lot harder to gather this information. But as time went on, he was able to piece it together from his work with NIDS, other associates, people like Chris, Tommy Glenn, other investigators that he'd been working with for years. There's a lot of different government agencies involved, and then there's one main government agency that kind of, basically they give them the money is what it comes down to. So you have Department of Energy, you have the Air Force Special Weapons Lab out of Kirtland Air Force Base, Atomic Energy Commission back in the early days with the gas boogie projects. You have your three-letter agencies like NSA, CIA involved in this through the Paul Benowitz story, which is documented in the book. So they're all intertwined, and you have to look at history. The easiest way for me to explain is if you look at the history of the Nevada test site in Area 51, it has nothing to do with aliens, just their basic operation of how they developed Project Blackbird and, you know, some of these, the stealth project and these aircraft. It gives you a good idea of how they operate, how the agencies are intertwined with each other, and then one main agency usually just pays the bills, and they're the one that controls everything. And if you apply that thinking and investigative technique towards emulations, this UFO mystery, it all starts to make sense and it comes together. And there's plenty of evidence to support it, which is more important.
So basically what I'm hearing is that it's a multi-agency or it's multiple groups that have some sort of intertwined agenda. Why do they have a need to mutilate cattle, though, and other livestock? Do you think your dad really came up with a concrete answer to that? What was his thinking on the government's motivation to do these cases?
The motivation, from my dad's point of view, in the early mutilations, they were finding evidence of, it looks like the entities involved were investigating radiation-type poisoning. This ties back into Project Plowshare because, of course, most people are aware, nearby outside of Dulce was Project Gas Boogie, which was one of these Project Plowshare projects. They've had them throughout the nation.
Yeah, and that's, I think it was a 29-kiloton nuclear device that they exploded underground in December 67, if I remember correctly, just after the Snippy case over the mountains in the San Luis Valley. And they exploded this tactical nuke, I guess, underground to free up gas deposits and ended up irradiating all the gas, and El Paso Gas couldn't even use it, I think, if I remember correctly. So you think that they were monitoring radiation levels as a result of that?
Yes, because, there's evidence that shows the gas boogie site actually had a leak up until around 96, I believe, and they didn't know where the leak was coming from, and that's one of the Plowshare sites that was, they did have contamination. Also, they didn't, the contaminated gas, they flared it off, which means they just burned the gas off, but that doesn't eliminate the nuclear contamination, that just burns off the gas. And the prevalent winds in that area, the nuclear fallout would have flown right into Dulce, Chama, Rio Riva County. You also have test sites like Ruleson, Colorado, Trinidad, Colorado. You saw a lot of mutilation rates in those areas also in the San Luis Valley, and I don't think I need to tell Chris about that.
No.
So there was early ties where it looked like a lot of these mutilations were used to be testing for radiation-type contamination, and that's why the cattle were being used. Going back to Nevada test site, the Nevada test site had their own herd of cattle that they were testing for these type of issues. Now, I'm not saying that's that specific program. It's called an animal investigative program. It's not the whole reason for the mutilations. But if you look into that program, it'll tell you why cattle were being used, because the bone marrow of 2 to 3 year old cattle was used to diagnose certain types of cancers. And in Dulce, they were finding that the pattern for the mutilated cows would follow 2 to 3 year old cows. So that started to make sense why a certain age group of cattle were being found mutilated. So the animal investigative program out of the Nevada test site isn't the entity that you blame for the mutilations, but it gives you a lot of good evidence as why cattle were being used for these type of experiments and what they were looking for. So that was the early mutilations they were finding in Dulce. When my dad started working for NIDS in the late 90s, he noticed mutilations were changing. And they didn't have as many in the Dulce area, but they were having a lot in Red River, New Mexico, Angel Fire, New Mexico, and it seemed like the pattern of the mutations had changed from more radiation testing to more of a weapons development testing, and a lot of it seemed to be based off of microwave weapons technology.
Hmm. Well, this works for our neck of the woods out here in northern New Mexico, southern Colorado, the area around the Four Corners, let's say, east of the Four Corners. But how about out in the Midwest? I mean, do you think that there were similar motivations out there? You tended to have older cows out there, cows that had just, oftentimes had just given birth to a calf. The Front Range of Colorado, very, very hard hit. Parts of Texas, Kansas, Iowa. Well, do you think the motivations by these, let's say, hypothetical government testing program, do you think that their motivations were the same out there?
Yes, it appears so, because in the early mutations, they started correlating the fallout rates from the nuclear testing at the Nevada test site and even like the Project Plowshare sites. There seemed to be a correlation between the fallout that was caused by the Nevada test site and the mutation rates. They were also testing weather patterns, and they noticed that when the jet stream would dip down into northern New Mexico, they'd see an increase in mutations in northern New Mexico. When it would move up to like Montana, Idaho, they'd see an increase in mutations up in that area. So they didn't know if they were testing fallout, but that was the best indication of to predict when the next rash of mutations would come. In the northern New Mexico area, some nights they'd have four in one night.
Four in one night. That's the way to stop it, Greg, for a second as we do our break. We'll get back to that. And you can finish your answer in a moment. We have Greg Valdez joining Gene and Chris. You're in
Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at webtv.net. That's MrUFO at webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Ceramic body armor is rated to stop six hits. But what about the seventh? Unlike ceramic or Kevlar, Infidel body armor is proven to take hit after hit, and it just won't quit. Reasonably priced and designed for the smart civilian prepper, Infidel stops hundreds of hits from small arms to high-powered rifles. That means safety and peace of mind. Buy yours at InfidelBodyArmor.com. Spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L BodyArmor.com. Infidel body armor just won't quit.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products, most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey Guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey Guy.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most of the soils that we grow our crops on here in the United States and across the industrialized world are almost completely depleted of almost all of the key minerals and trace elements that our bodies need to rebuild themselves, fight off cancer, and be healthy. I then searched out the best vitamin and mineral company out there and discovered Youngevity. The Youngevity products are designed to give you the real nutrition you need, and once you've got that, you don't have to eat as much to be satisfied. I've lost 37 pounds in 2 months, simply getting the vitamins and minerals I need. Check it out for yourself. It's incredible. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com today and order your first canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Complete Multivitamin Mineral Complex Dietary Supplement. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have Greg Valdez, and we're exploring primarily cattle mutilations. And before we broke, he was in the middle of an answer to one of Chris's long questions. Greg, you said that in one night there were four mutilations.
Yes, that's correct. Raleigh Tafoya, who's actually the tribal police chief in Dulce, he had four of his cows killed in one night. So they'd see a lot in a short period of time, and then they wouldn't have them for several months, and then they'd have more again, or they'd move to another area like Red River or Trinidad, Colorado, or San Luis Valley. Like Chris mentioned earlier, the Midwest, they get them up in Montana. Canada had a lot for a while, because my dad actually went up there and spoke to the Royal Canadian Mounted Patrol about the mutilation wave they were having up in Canada. So they were pretty sporadic, but as I mentioned earlier, when you look at the fallout rates for a lot of this nuclear testing, those seem to correlate with the mutilation rates and where they were having the high mutilation rates. It's nothing solid, but that's the best thing they were able to determine.
So David Perkins came up with a theory very early on that he seemed to notice areas of high incidence of these unexplained livestock deaths tended to be downstream and downwind of these areas where not only above-ground testing, underground testing was occurring, but also weapons labs where we enrich uranium, where we create triggers, let's say, and the nuclear power plants. Any place where we would utilize radioactive materials downwind and downstream, he figured, this is in, I think, 78, he came up with this theory. But Greg, you mentioned that there seemed to be a shift that took place. We did have sort of a lull period in the end of the 80s, and then it seemed like all of a sudden down in Alabama, we've had Ted Oliphant on the show prior to this, down in Alabama. He investigated a few dozen cases down there, and he suspected weapons testing, that possibly they were testing some sort of bioagent. Now, when people talk to you about this subject, and they might be a little skeptical, oftentimes I hear, well, how can these people pull this off and never have some equipment break down, somebody mess up so that these particular perpetrators can be identified? I mean, how can they be so slick and get away with upwards of possibly 10,000 cases? That number's been bannered around through the years. I think it might be high. But what do you think? I mean, how these guys are pretty slick if they can do this for so many years and not get caught.
Well, that's one of the reasons that they were always suspecting either a large pharmaceutical company or the government or something that's well-funded, because it takes a lot of resources to pull this off.
Right.
Of course, if you've been in northern New Mexico, I can't speak for Alabama or where Ted's been at or some of these places in Texas that have had mutations, but I can speak for Dulce. This pretty rugged area, and it's pretty remote. There's not a lot of people where they were finding these cattle, so it was relatively actually easy for them to conduct the mutilations up in northern New Mexico because it's so sparsely populated. And that might be a reason why they had so many in the area. It was just easier to operate. And then you add that with the proximity to some of our national labs and Kirtland Air Force Base. That makes sense why they might have picked Dulce and why they might have had so many in Rio Riva County. It's rugged country. Sometimes those ranchers can't get to their cattle for several days because they get up in the high country and there's just not a lot of people to view things. So that might be a reason why they never caught anyone in the act.
You know, people ask me all the time about cases prior to the infamous Smithy the Horse case in September 67. In all your dad's forays in the area, and of course living up there, and then you're talking to locals up there, did you ever hear any stories or of any cases that happened back in the 50s or early 60s?
No, in Dulce, the original story started in 76 with the Gomez mutilations. They were seeing the weird lights. We call them UFOs. That's for everyone to determine on their own. But those lights, and they started seeing those around the same time period, which is 76, when this whole hotbed of activity started in the Dulce area.
And also, one of the photographs that you have here is pretty intriguing, your ubiquitous black helicopter shot. Helicopters were seen as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they were pretty common in Dulce during this whole time period, and there's still reports, random reports of people, locals that I've talked to. They still see them every once in a while in the Dulce area. But that was pretty common. We'd see them all pretty frequently, almost as much as the mysterious lights that we were seeing at night. So
there were a couple of cases too, if memory serves me correct, where your dad found physical evidence on the site. In one case in particular, tripod marks, and also other physical evidence, which is, if you know anything about this subject, you know that finding physical evidence at a mutilation site is extremely rare. It does not happen very often. Even just simple things like tracks are often never found. But why don't you talk a little bit about some of the physical evidence that they were able to find at sites? Being, you know, a very good investigator, if there was something there, your dad would be able to find it. And I see pictures here of a gas mask. That's a pretty interesting story.
Actually, three of the mutilations, two of them were two separate Gomez mutilations, and one of them was a mutilation up in Red River in the late 90s. The two Gomez ones were early. One was in the 76, the first mutilation, and one was, I believe, 78. They found evidence of what looked like tripod marks. They were exact same dimensions. I think they were like 18 inches apart and 9 inches or 6 inches wide. Don't quote me on the exact dimensions, but they found them on three different mutilation sites. On the first Gomez site, when Manuel first found his cow, he noticed those tripod marks. He went back into town to call my dad. And when they went out the next day to look at the cow, there was more tripod marks on top of his tire tracks from the day before. So it looked like whoever, whatever was killing his cow went back and finished the job. And when he first found the first cow, I think it was the left ear, was still intact when he went first initially found the cow. When he went back into town again to call my dad, when he came back, that ear was missing. So someone had to come back and finish the mutilation, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And they landed on top of his tire tracks. And from those tire tracks, some smaller marks went to the cow. And it looked like it had followed the cow, where the cow finally died and laid on its side. And it looked like the aircraft, we're assuming it's an aircraft because of the technology. It landed on a stump and it almost tipped over when it landed from the impressions that it left in the dirt. So that was one of the things that Howard Burgess and my dad started looking at when they first got involved in this. On a later mutilation at the Gomez Ranch, this was actually behind his house, they found the same triangular impressions in the dirt. And it was that time of the year, is drought, kind of like what we're going through now, where whatever left those impressions had to be heavy enough to mark the dirt because the dirt was so dry and compacted from the lack of moisture. And then in the Red River case, it was muddy that time of the year, and whatever aircraft landed, it almost crashed into a fence because it looked dry when you look at the pictures. And what happens when the aircraft landed, almost slid into a fence because whoever was driving that, that's up to whoever to decide what was driving it. They kind of misinterpreted how soft the ground was. And it had the same dimensions as the early mutilation cases from the Gomez Ranch. And this was at Red River. So it seemed like they were using the same type of aircraft. And also in Lindrith, New Mexico, in the 80s, they found, evidence where there was turbine wash. Just that time of the year, for whatever reason, there's moisture underneath old pieces of sagebrush. And you could see whatever came in had stirred it up with the turbulence. We were able to measure it, and it was exactly the same distance where the aircraft, whatever aircraft it was, whether it's a helicopter or magic ship, came in, and it turned up all these old cow patties and pieces of sagebrush. And then you could see where it went back up into the air, and there was no more turbulence. So there's a lot of that type of evidence.
How about the gas mask? That's a good one.
The gas mask was found at one of the Gomez mutilations, and they also found a high-altitude humidity sensor that they were able to trace back to the Air Force, and those were found on the Gomez Ranch as well. And that's where they found the radar shaft. Am I saying shaft right? That was also found at one of the Gomez mutilations.
Yeah, why don't you explain about the radar shaft? That's very interesting. That's pretty rare to find this stuff in not just spread out and distributed and around like they normally, when they shoot it out the back, it sort of flares out and then creates a cloud. You guys found packages of this stuff. Why don't you tell us about that?
Was that a location of one of the, I believe it was a mutilated cow, might have been the horse. I'd have to look at the reports. But the aircraft that was trying to disperse this radar chaff, it malfunctioned because the packages were still wrapped in cardboard. And I was just showing Chris earlier, I still have the wrapping from it. You could see the flight line that the aircraft took, and it went straight to the cow and just simply walked down in a straight line, and we were finding these packages of radar chaff.
Ooh, I'll tell you what, we'll get into more of this description in our next segment. We have Greg Valdez joining Gene and Chris, and we're trying to put a real reality check on the cattle mutilation phenomenon. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Join us in Joshua Tree, California, August 9th through 11th for the Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, a weekend of in-depth exploration into ancient alien, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, and new evidence of ongoing contact. The conference will feature films, panels, lectures, workshops, and fieldwork with leading experts, including Stephen Greer, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Graham Hancock, Jim Mars, Michael Tellinger, Laura Eisenhower, Jason Martell, David Wilcock, Doc Wallace, David Zareda, and many, many more of the biggest names in ufology. The conference will coincide with the Perseid Meteor Shower, and the Joshua Tree Retreat Center offers the perfect place for sightings through the clear desert sky. Enter to win a free ticket at contactinthedesert.com. We look forward to seeing you in Joshua Tree in August for a serious look at mounting evidence that we are not alone. For more information, go to contactinthedesert.com or call 760-365-8371.